You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. 10 years ago this December, the Mitchell Report was made public. Appointed by then-Commissioner Bud Selig, the report was named after the former senator from Maine. It was more than 300 pages long, and the investigation lasted about 2 years. The press conference held in New York City in December 2007 was carried live on MLB.com and hosted by yours truly. To talk about that historic press conference on its 10th anniversary, we welcome the investigative reporter for the New York Daily News, Christian Redd. Christian, great to have you with me on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Thank you so much. What do you remember about the time in which that press conference was held?
Well, you have to dial back about 2 years prior to the release of the Mitchell Report to give it some context. I'm sure you remember, Ed, the events leading up to when Mitchell made his findings public. But in 2005, there were congressional hearings with baseball, and everyone from that time frame in the media can remember certainly Mark McGuire's appearance before Congress. Sammy Sosa was also there. But the greater takeaway from those congressional hearings was that baseball got battered. Congressional committee members were claiming that they weren't being transparent about their addressing the performance enhancing drug issue. What were they going to do about that? And that congressional hearing really led to Selig, who was then the commissioner, as you pointed out, appointing Mitchell to carry out this investigation of baseball's doping culture and its doping past. So you have the congressional hearings in 2006 in March. Selig appoints Mitchell to do this investigation. And as you said, it almost lasted 2 years before Mitchell released the report with his findings. But the important thing I think to take away from the events leading up to the report's release were that baseball got hammered, for lack of a better word, in those hearings, and that really spurred the need for them to or for Selig to appoint someone to look into the culture and find as much as he could about that.
The commissioner went outside baseball, Christian, for an investigator, but I guess he really had to do that so that there would be no sense of impropriety or that it was an inside job.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. That is, first and foremost, was in Selig's mind, was to appoint someone that could have, not only someone that could be independent and carry out the investigation without any interference, but someone with Mitchell's respect and integrity. You know, he had a storied resume during his life as a public servant, so he was someone that was held in very high regard, and that brought instant credibility to what he was doing when he was appointed.
But that credibility in some quarters, Christian, was compromised by Senator Mitchell having been a minority owner of the Boston Red Sox.
Correct. There was a tie. And, you know, he was asked about that by some of my former colleagues months before the report was released. And his response to that question or that issue was that we're going to do everything we can to make this report as complete and thorough as possible. And if the critics wanted to come at us, meaning Mitchell and his investigators, they can do that. That's every critic's right, or anybody that's questioning, you know, any one element of what he was doing. But his response further was that I'm going to let the report speak for itself in our findings that we've uncovered, and base, you know, our integrity on what we find in the report. So, I think he didn't feel that that was a big issue at all in his process of uncovering, you know, what he did.
Were there, Christian, any conditions attached to the investigation, or was it a case for the senator of having the autonomy to go wherever the investigation led?
That's the way it was presented when he was appointed, Ed. When Selig announced that Mitchell was going to conduct this independent investigation, I'm paraphrasing, but it was essentially he's going to leave no stone unturned, and he's going to have the authority to go where the investigation leads him. But the important thing to remember for that phase of this whole Mitchell report anniversary is that Mitchell didn't have any kind of subpoena power as a congressional committee would have. So that was very limiting to his process. And he pointed that out when I spoke with him for this 10-year anniversary story, and pointed out that, again, that was one of the big hurdles going into it, was that he did not have the power to subpoena players, former players. They would have to speak to him on their own volition.
And another hurdle was that he did not receive any cooperation, Christian, from the Players Association, the Players Union. Fortunately, that has since changed. But at that time, that too was a big obstacle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he pointed that out, again, in the most recent comments for this story, saying that that was, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, obstacle. But that he also made a point to say in 2017 that a lot has changed since 2007 with regard to players' cooperation and the union's cooperation on thorny or important issues of note, that they are a lot more open now to at least working with baseball to address, the problems that arise in the game.
Christian Redd is with us on the 10th anniversary of the Mitchell Report. He has written so well and so thoroughly as the investigative reporter for the New York Daily News. Senator Mitchell did not get the cooperation from the Players Association. He did not have subpoena power, but, Christian, he did get assistance elsewhere.
He did. You're right. And two of the biggest contributors to Mitchell's investigators and investigation were Brian McNamee and Kirk Radomski. But I think before any listener or person in public wants to draw their conclusions about those two men and their past, it's important to note that both of them were cooperating with federal authorities and the investigation out of Northern California with regard to Balco. And one of the conditions that McNamee met was that he would cooperate with Mitchell, provided he spoke the truth and therefore would protect him from prosecution going forward. So the theory behind that is that why would McNamee have any reason to lie and set himself up for prosecution when he revealed the information that he did with regard to the former players that he trained and subsequently provided drugs to?
2 years before the Mitchell Report, in 2005, Jose Canseco wrote his explosive book called Juiced. What effect, if any, Christian, did Canseco's book have on the report by Senator Mitchell, you think?
Well, he didn't comment when I asked him that very question, Mitchell, that is. But in my mind, and I think in a lot of people's minds in the sports writing world or in the media, and even outside the media, was that that had a very explosive effect on the game. If not for anything other than it really opened and peeled back the layers of what was going on in the game prior to baseball implementing a drug testing policy. Because for those listeners who don't know, prior to 2003, which was a survey testing year, there was no drug testing policy. That had been something that the union and baseball had gone back and forth on until finally agreeing to implement one through the collective bargaining process.
You have been to the Dominican Republic many times. You have the great good fortune to be bilingual. And you were in the Dominican Republic at the time in which the, Senator Mitchell stepped to the podium to speak on that December day in 2007. And you have been to the Dominican Republic to investigate the availability of performance-enhancing drugs and found in an expose that they were readily available. What is it still really easy down there to get performance-enhancing drugs?
Well, the short answer is, I don't know if it's as easy as it was in 2009 when I went down there, and within 25 minutes after landing and getting to the hotel, I was able to walk into a pharmacy and buy hardcore steroids. And I'm not talking about, you know, anything that's like an anti-inflammatory or...
Right.
This was hardcore stuff, and I got the hypodermic needle along with the purchase of the drug.
Wow.
But I believe it's probably still easy to obtain those drugs down there because they are legal. And until there's some kind of countrywide or government-issued policy banning over-the-counter drugs of that nature from being sold to any person that walks in, then you're going to have a difficult time preventing people from accessing them if they want to use them.
It's been a decade since the Mitchell report was made public. The New York Daily News went back to speak with many of the people connected to the report to see what effect, if any, the Mitchell report has had on the sport. And what have been those effects, Christian?
Well, I think in the sense of baseball's addressing the problem, you have seen stronger or more stringent penalties be implemented within their drug testing policy. In other words, players who test positive for a first time are penalized 50 games, and then a second time is 100 games, and then a third time is a lifetime ban. That was not the case when the drug testing policy was first implemented. So I think there's one example of change that, and again, these are changes that the players have to agree to as part of the union. So I think that there has been a positive direction as far as the penalty phase of these kinds of infractions. But as far as some of the fallout with other people, you take someone like McNamee, and putting aside his personal woes over the years, now that was a very heavy burden to carry for him.
That was devastating.
Cooperating in the fashion that he did, but the impact of that and... You know, certainly the legal blitz that followed between him and Roger Clemens, who was his former client and who he trained and who he accused of using performance-enhancing drugs via McNamee in the Mitchell report. So personally, I think that was difficult on him. And also, on the flip side, it was, according to his lawyer, it was difficult for Clemens. I mean, he had to weather a congressional hearing alongside McNamee that many would say was his own doing, because he was one of the few players that contested the findings in the report. But ultimately, of course, Clemens was indicted by a federal grand jury and went to trial twice. Once was a mistrial in 2011, and then 2012, he was acquitted of all charges. But according to his attorney, Rusty Hardin, you know, he still suffers to this day, whether it's his Hall of Fame candidacy is still in limbo, and his own personal travails going through that entire process. So I think, you know, if you take individuals and the impact of what the report meant to them, you see a variety of different things. But another person I talked to was Dan Nulty, you know, a reliever that was only in the game in the majors for four years. He was on the 1999 World Champion Yankee team. But what he was going through with his own admitted use of those drugs and performance enhancers was devastating to him then, but now he looks back on not only the Mitchell Report in a positive light, but feels like baseball is doing everything it can to combat the problem, which he said was at the peak in the steroid era when he was playing, was a pervasive bad stain on the game.
Personally, Christian, where do you think we are 10 years later in baseball, the state of baseball and the state of its fight against performance-enhancing drugs?
My own personal feeling is that I think that baseball's taken the steps to at least address the issue. I mean, they're one of the few sports leagues, if any, that tests for growth hormone. However, having studied this and written about this issue, i.e., you know, performance-enhancing drug use and the science behind it, that's the key, is that the science is always evolving. And I also feel that if a player or an athlete has the chance to make millions of dollars, that's always been at the root of this PED issue. If an athlete has a chance to make millions of dollars to set himself or herself up for a very nice life, that temptation is still a very great one to use whatever possible to get to that elite level and obtain that contract or obtain that path to get to riches. That temptation is never going to go away. So you're always, I believe, going to find people willing to bend the rules so that they can be one step ahead of the athlete next to them or on either side of them.
The laboratory always seems to be ahead of the police.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how frightening it was when we heard Alex Rodriguez talk about gummies and something that could be digested in such a way that the results would be instantaneous and undetectable.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the other, another side of it is that 10 years after the Mitchell Report, I mean, look what was born in 2012, 2013 in the Biogenesis scandal and how many people were ensnared in that, including Alex. At the center of it was this so quote-unquote doctor, Anthony Bosch, running this kind of business out of an anti-aging clinic in South Florida.
It's been 10 years since the Mitchell Report was made public. So that'll do it for Christian Redd and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.